Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
All right, we are back with another episode of Mouthing Off, the Theater Arts and Culture Podcast for the Twin Cities and Beyond. I'm Kevin Couchman, the playwright and director of moderation at The Hive, October 3rd to the 13th, here in beautiful St. Paul, Minnesota, starring, featuring Amanda Forstrom, my partner in crime at Bad Mouth Theater Company. We have a great guest for you, but first I want to ask, Amanda, how do you feel? Are you getting enough sleep? Are you brain sick? How are you doing?
I'm not brain sick. I'm doing great. It feels really great to have an audience for the show at moderationplay.com. Go check it out. And yeah, to be in the thick of it and really get audience reactions, feeling their energy in the room and how they're receiving it is always really, really exciting. So I'm in heaven. So
I'm also really excited about
our guest today.
Absolutely. We'll introduce her in just one moment. Tickets are at moderationplay.com. This is at The Hive. We've had Eric and Laura on the podcast. They are fantastic. They're doing a great job. The houses have been great. My priest, Father Mark, attended last evening. Wonderful. Thank you, Father Mark, for coming. I'll be at confession later today, but it's just really wonderful. And Amanda, you're doing a great job, as is Matthew. It's a two-hander, so you're out on the island the entire time, 90 minutes, no intermission. If you want $5 off tickets, code is BADMOUTH. So one more time, code is BADMOUTH, $5 off, moderationplay.com. But our guest is across the river in Minneapolis. We have Allison Ruth with us from The Jungle Theater. Allison, this is your first time on Mouthing Off, so welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great, and can confirm that moderation is awesome. So two thumbs up.
Hey, cool. All right, those are all the thumbs. So yeah, that's great, and thank you for coming. You were there on the first evening, the evening we opened. So cool, great, awesome. Well, thank you for coming, and I know you're a director and a dramaturg, and there's some cool things happening at The Jungle over in Minneapolis, a great theater, an incredible space. Love that theater. I love seeing shows there. It's been a while, but I'll have to come back. This will be the hopefully it'll be an overture to get me back over there. So I guess without further ado, tell us about what's going on at The Jungle. Welcome us to The Jungle, if you will. Then we want to get to know you a little more, but first, what's happening over there?
Well, the first thing is we got brand new carpet. So art aside, welcome to The Jungle indeed with our brand new carpet, in the lobby. but once you go over the new carpet, the next thing coming up is October 21st and 22nd. It's a Monday, Tuesday at 7:30. We're doing a reading of a play called Veal by Jojo Jones, and it is directed by Joy Dolo, a Twin Cities fave, one of my faves. We're still assembling the cast, but Veal is a play that, when I describe it, it's like, it's a play that will draw blood. Like, it's really, I'm kind of scared of it. It takes place in like a sort of the future, and what has happened is there's been sort of this some sort of like vague apocalyptic event, and a 26-year-old woman named Chelsea has become the queen of North America, and she's sitting in her like ruins castle, you know, sort of, you know, a sort of like a castle like structure with the ruins of society around her, and her like three middle school friends, frenemies are like coming before her to ask for, I won't like spoil what the favor is, but she's like, but they're coming to her to ask for a favor. And, before she will listen to them, she makes them act out sort of her most like traumatic middle school memories. And it's escapism. So like, that's the biggest gift, is it like will suck you in. It's prickly. But I really recommend it. It's awesome. So
that sounds like my cup of tea. And again, that is what dates in October?
That is so it's Monday, Tuesday, October 21st and 22nd, 7:30. And it's free. You can come for free. You can like also choose to pay if you're a millionaire and you want to support the theater. But if you can't swing any money, that's great. You can still come for free.
Great. And how do people RSVP?
Oh, they just go to jungletheater.org and like you reserve tickets as if you're buying tickets, but then you'll see a $0 option.
Sure. Excellent. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay. Very good. And as a playwright, I have to ask, how long has this series been going on? And how do you sort of involve people? Do you find people through the Playwrights Center? What's the sort of process there? I have to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good question. So I've been at the Jungle for 5 years now. This is the third season we've done this play reading series. It's my baby. It started just because, like, we all see across the country, but especially in the Twin Cities where I see theater, all the theaters are doing just less shows. There's just less of everything because everyone has less money. And so we have shorter seasons of full productions, and we just were like, this is just not enough. So to get more stories out there, to hire more playwrights, to hire actors and directors, we started this play reading series. And I program it. And I just find them through, there's no like formal anything. It's like, I just read plays all the time. That's just what I do. And so if you're listening, you're a playwright, send me your plays. My email is on the website, or, you know, the Jungle website, but it's aruth@jungletheater.org. But, I read plays all the time. I do read for the Playwright Center, so I get a bunch through there. But I also have known playwrights for a number of years. And so they send me their stuff. They send me their
great
stuff. And it's just me reading. And there's really no formal process.
Yeah, that's great. So you just curate it. That's great. That's how we do it too. I mean, we don't have a formal process, though we do take script submissions at the website, badmouthtc.com. We kind of started out doing readings just to get our sea legs under us. And then this is our second full production, this production of Moderation. But the other thing I want to say too is if you're in or around the Twin Cities, but even outside of the Twin Cities, and you are a theater maker, a creator, an artistic person, we're always looking for guests too to come on. And you can email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com. So I'm looking at, it's jungletheater.org, T-E-R, jungletheater.org. I see veal and the little cow there. So they're very fun. And I have a younger sister named Chelsea, who in a scenario like this very plausibly could become Queen of North America.
Love it.
So
send her over.
Yeah, really. Yeah. She's out in California, but she would have a laugh at that. That's great. I love a good play reading. And as a playwright, I'll tell you, of course, you don't need to be told this, but that you perform a really important service for playwrights. I mean, you know that. I mean, plays. It's extremely rare for a playwright to just jump from zero to a production. And in fact, most playwrights wouldn't even, you wouldn't even want it. You need those readings to hone the play into something that's production ready. So has that always been your passion, new plays and new writing? Is that the background you come from?
I way back when I started, like many theater people in like church basement theater, doing acting when I was a kid. But then I went to undergrad for English, and then I was booping around Philadelphia doing like literary dramaturgy internships, and then I went to grad school for dramaturgy at Iowa. And the Iowa Playwrights Workshop, that's when I was introduced to like all these playwrights and all these plays. And now it's become like truly, I found a life purpose in grad school. It probably for like also personal reasons too. Like I didn't know what I was doing, and now I know what I'm doing. But yes, I love new plays, and I love imperfect but bold new plays. Like I think that's why I think the reading series is super fun, because the stakes are low. There's not, you know, like you can kind of get away with more when you're doing a play reading for the audience. Sometimes things can be riskier, edgier, and just more imperfect. They can be messier and you forgive it more. And things can be like over-workshopped or dramaturged to death, where you like kind of cull out a lot of the weirdness, a lot of like the really good stuff. So I love readings because I really love the messiness. Yeah, the original question was like, is that my passion? Yes. Yes, it is.
Hey, great. Good. Okay, yeah. Good. Yeah, you know, if you like what you do, you'll never work a day in your life, they say, yeah, right? Exactly. You went and got an MFA in dramaturgy at Iowa. I didn't realize that they offered an MFA specifically in that. Well, I have to ask the cliche question, and that's a good school, by the way. Do you know Deborah Yarchin? You must know Deborah.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't know her personally, but I know who she is. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I think she got into New Dramatists. So I'm very happy for her. Yeah. I've known her a very long time. And of course, you know, that's a big career making opportunity for her. So I'm really glad she got that. She was a guest on this pod previously. So dramaturgy for the people, and this goes out on the radio. So if you're listening on old timey radio, 94.1 FM Frogtown Radio in St. Paul, you may not know what that word means. And the sort of the old joke is neither do the dramaturgs, but why don't you, since we have a real live one here in the studio, as it were, what is dramaturgy for people who maybe don't know, Allison?
Totally. And yes, it to second that, it is possible to have a MFA in it and not be able to define it. But I've been working on my definition. It can be anything that can be anything you want it to be. It is basically somebody who is like understands plays, and like, you know, you can get really narrow with like the structure of plays and how they operate, or you can be like an expert in a certain period of history, or Shakespeare. I don't know, kind of like just like a big, huge play fan. But it's also a little bit, I'm going to be like, what's the cleaned up version? It's like, okay, so like, you know, philosophy, you can, like philosophy isn't nonsense, but like being a philosopher is kind of nonsense. You're like, oh, like, what do? I'm a philosopher. You're like, oh, well.
Did you? I happen to have a degree in philosophy, incidentally. Oh, but well, then do you? Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no, there are no philosophy jobs. There are no philosophy jobs, right? nobody wants that. And yet philosophy majors, I have to raise the flag. Philosophy majors among the liberal arts tend to earn the most money, principally because it's not a soft degree. You learn how to think. And I think quite a few go into law. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of bends the average. But so, yeah, that's an interesting comparison. I've never thought about that, Allison.
Like dramaturgy isn't nonsense. Everyone should know the like structure and understand the narratives. and how to talk about plays. Mm-hmm. But being a dramaturg is like, okay.
Sure. What do I do really? Yes. No, I understand what you mean. It's sort of like a choose your own adventure career. And for people who, you know, to deepen this, it's, as you say, it's like you can specialize. So you can be a dramaturg who specializes in period dramas from Shakespeare's time. And that's what you do. And you can come into a room, read the situation and add value, which at the risk of sounding corporate, but you can contribute artistically in a meaningful way without having to ramp up. A new play dramaturg can look at a script and break its back immediately and go, this is what's going on in the second act. And to do it in a gentle way, right? Without you have to manage a lot of personalities, and theater artists are famously can be touchy and playwrights can be touchy. So there's a quality of sort of, you know, a dramaturg in many ways is for new plays acts almost like an editor at times, might for a novelist, where there's this working partnership. And you know, the dramaturg, it depends on the comfort level, but I've had dramaturgs get attached enough to a play to go, hey, is this scene working? Like, what are we doing? You know, and that's not an easy conversation to have, but sometimes you have to have it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's, Mark Bly, who's like a grandfather of the field in North America. He says sometimes, like, when he dramaturgs a play and works on a new play, he's like, there's nothing you can point to on stage that I did, but if you cut the play, I would bleed. And that's kind of how it feels. You feel so much a part of, so invested in this, baby. But sometimes it's hard to be like, oh, that's the part that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely.
I guess I have a question too about the playwrights in the reading series. Are they all, you know, sort of local? Are they established playwrights or fairly new to writing? Or do you have kind of a mix of both?
Yeah, it's been a mix. I'd say, well, I don't know. It's been actually maybe not a mix, but it's been all like mid-career playwrights. Playwrights that are, they're not brand new. They've written a lot. I like to catch people whose name isn't known. I know they're great, and it just drives me nuts that they're not known by more people. Some have been local, but they some have not been. It's nice when they can be at rehearsal, but sometimes we just do their show. And I'm also very like, this is not a development opportunity. Like, we're giving you some money to do your play. We're giving these some people to put it on its feet for two nights and Sharon getting the play out there.
I think it's great you do it for two nights.
Yeah, that's new cool. This year. Yeah, got a little more funding, so we can.
Is there very much? Oh, funding. Funding. Yeah.
That's moderation. A separate episode in itself, isn't it?
You can just hear me. Yeah, we do take donations at the website, badmouthtc.com. We are a 501c3 or whatever it is. So it's tax deductible. I'm sure the jungle is too. Is the jungle a not-for-profit?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Same thing. But yes, no, support any arts organization now before they all die.
Absolutely. And we had a very generous donation that has kind of made our season possible, too. It really only takes one. And I don't think people realize, I mean, we're obviously in a much different position from the jungle where you have real estate and you're right at Lake and Lindale and everything. But, relative to, say, film, theater is cheap. Theater is pretty affordable to do, you know? So if you're sitting on a bag of, if you bought Doge early and you're sitting on a bag of crypto money and you're looking for a tax break, right? You actually can get involved in the theater as a patron, and the arts do need, you know, we do need patronage and money. But two nights, I got to ask, are you seeing playwrights make changes between night one and night two, or are they more civilized than that?
We haven't. Yeah. No, just because it's just so quick.
It's just so quick. Yeah, sure. Yeah, and it's not really a developmental thing. How many of these are you doing each year?
We're doing four this season. And we've done three or four in the past couple years per season. They're a lot of fun. They're kind of spaced out throughout the season, but.
Yeah, great. That's great. You got to keep the lights on at the theater and everything. I think you mentioned too, I guess in the green room, that you had a production coming up too at the Jungle. Do you want to tell people about that?
Yeah, well, there's the the like jungle next jungle production is called Dinner for One. And it opens in November. And that is an hour of just joy and entertainment. It's kind of like holiday friendly, but more just like celebratory New Year's, winter solstice holiday energy. So even if you don't celebrate, whatever you celebrate, you can have a good time with it. That's delightful. And that runs through January 1st. And then in March, we'll have The Effect by Lucy Prebble, which I'm directing. And that is a four-hander about a clinical drug trial for an antidepressant, where two volunteer participants in the trial fall in love, and they don't know if their love is real, quote unquote real, or tied to the effects of the antidepressant. And the two doctors who are monitoring it, they have their own complicated relationship with the morality of what they're doing. Yeah, that's what's coming up at the jungle this winter.
Great, great. Yeah. What drew you to that? I mean, obviously, she wrote Enron, for people who don't know. Yeah.
And actually, mm-hmm. That's so British. Funny because I was in Enron. So it was a wild, wild play. It is huge. And a smaller theater company in DC did it. And I got to play Claudia Rowe. And it was just so fantastic and so wild. And the magical realism, the comedy, dark humor. But oh, man, she is such a fantastic writer and just really on the edge of things, I think. And yeah. So totally. Please tell us more about how you found that play.
Totally. Well, my first introduction was Enron as well. And then she also wrote for Succession, the TV show. So if that kind of that like dark humor, wryness, that's her style. And this is a play. It was written in 2013. The Effect was written in 2013. And it's been a title we've been bouncing around even pre-COVID. So, and this was just like the first, I don't know, time we were like, no, let's really commit to it. Cause they did it got like a revival production in National Theatre in London. And then it went to New York and it was just in the air. So we decided to do it, but it's, the writing is just so great. It is so tight. It's like this four-hander that you just, I don't know. You jump on the ride and you don't get out, no intermission. It's just like this really tight show. And it's about like love and depression and neuroscience. I don't know. The characters are just like, they just kind of almost embarrass you with how much you relate to them. you're like, oh, that's, yeah, I've said and done that. And I, we all have complicated relationship with, the medical community. I think at this point with going through the COVID, the medicine truther, but it kind of ramps up these themes of like trusting the medical community and who's making money off of what. And
I'm super excited because I have an actor friend, Katie Kleiger, who went to the Guthrie BFA program, and she did it at Studio Theater, and I missed it because I was in another show at the same time. So I'm super excited to come and see it. And like also having done Enron, like I said, it's just, she's a fantastic writer, and it is a little scary how kind of on the nose and really how well she gets into people's souls in the corners and the dark places in there. And you see a lot of her writing in real life, when you kind of look around. So I'm really excited.
Totally. Oh yeah. Good. I'm excited too. I think it'll be really great. So.
And when is that again? That's next year.
That'll be March 2025. It basically runs at the jungle the whole month of March.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'll try to get out. And this is, now that you've been on Mouthing Off, this is an open invitation. So when it comes around again, definitely reach out to us and come back on the show, and maybe we can spread the word, put butts in seats. You can also bring, if you want to bring an actor along with you, or if you're like, no, I don't want to talk to them again, you can send an actor. Do you know what I mean? We're always looking for guests. We have this radio show. We got to be filling it up, and we love talking to people. This is really our passion. Yeah, it's so funny. We didn't even really ask for this show. People like kind of came to us and said, do you want to do? I'm like, all right, why not? You know, we'll put this on the radio.
Who love to hear themselves talk. I mean,
yeah, sure.
Of course, we'll be on that show. Of course, we'll be on that show.
Yeah, but quite very, very seriously. Yeah, we love doing this. It's a lot of fun. And the hour always goes by so fast when you start talking shop. And hopefully this is accessible to people who maybe aren't quote unquote theater people. The Twin Cities has such a vital scene. It feels like with the plague and everything, things kind of obviously shut down for a while. So hopefully we can be a part of kind of bringing everything back to life again would be our goal. And so you're directing that play, Allison.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Have you already cast it?
Yeah, we just finished casting. Casting takes forever. I don't think I'm allowed to announce it though, because we
No spoilers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Everything.
Okay. Well, and that's what a wonderful space to get to produce a play in. Do you want to speak a little bit to the nature of the jungle and sort of what it's like to direct a play there?
Yeah, totally. And I understand so the jungle has been around for 30 years. And I didn't know sort of the old jungle, but I kind of understand that it was like a lot of classics highly regarded for especially design. Kind of over the past, 10 or so years since the founder left, it's gotten much more into new work and slightly more experimental. I mean, that word can mean anything depending on who's defining the word experimental, but I'm just meaning it to you, say like trying out new work. We've done last season, we did like a show in the lobby. We've also done a show it's called The Courtroom out at Hamline University and like a little traveling show. And then this at the theater, if you haven't been there, it's we call it like a grandma's living room type of lobby vibe. Then you go into the theater and it's 150 seats. So it's small. And the stage is kind of like a short, long rectangle kind of panorama. It's just like a little music box. And it's no matter where you sit, it's a good seat. And it's a very intimate space. So I think I love seeing shows there.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of venues in and around the Twin Cities and like the vibe of the space, it's probably my favorite because it has that nice, cozy, warm, like on a December afternoon or evening, right? You kind of get in there and it has that sort of warmth that I look for in a theater. I don't want to talk trash about other places, but certain places can be a little chilly, let's say. And really like the warmth. There's a German word, Gemütlichkeit, like the hominess, the sort of warmth of the jungle is really appealing. And as a playwright, obviously the playwright, you aspire to Broadway and massive houses and everything. But like my heart is always in the little black box places, and like anything bigger than the jungle / history theater, it starts to feel really impersonal to me.
Totally.
And I think the best thing that we can offer in the theater right now is that personal, that direct contact without a screen intermediating. Mm-hmm. Are you with me?
I'll add as like a performer and I guess like director, choreographer, that my favorite places to work in are the tiny in your face black boxes, which is what moderation is. So I feel very lucky to be doing that. But there's just something, there's no escapism. There's no turning it off. you always have to be on every single second to second. There's no kind of turning your back and relaxing in your, you know, uncomfortable high heel shoes for a second. I mean, the audience is there with you the whole time. And actually my favorite configuration is in the round, theater in the round. And it's rarely done because it takes a very unique space has that capabilities. But I'll add too that the jungle is such it's very endearing and charming space. And so when you kind of walk into it, you just kind of feel that old world or old school charm. And so you're just ready to laugh or ready to cry or ready to just, yeah, it's very cozy. It's really nice.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like performers have said like you can, you know, you have all the lights, but you can just feel the audience much closer than that, like the Guthrie or something, even though the Guthrie does very different types of shows, so that are more suitable for that. But we tend to do programming that is suited for that closeness and intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Allison, you were saying you began your theater career in church basements out east and yeah. Acting. So let's get to know you a little bit. You started as an actor. Tell us about your origins in theater. Curious about that.
I'm from Needham, Massachusetts, the suburb of Boston. I just did like after school theater. I was more of a ham. I think when I was younger, I've gotten shyer as I got older, and I loved acting. But then it comes time to like go to college, and just the idea of like auditioning for a program, I just couldn't do it. So I went to school at NYU. So I loved being in New York, if you like theater, is great. And so there were a lot of people like me who wanted to do like theater art on the side, but then weren't going to Tisch. So I kind of kept going in theater, and that's when I like dabbled in directing and that type of theater where like you do everything. You make the props and you're the stage manager, and oh, you have to go on for a song, and it was a lot of fun. Then I moved to Philadelphia after school, like you do for a boy. I went, but it was great because I went to the Wilma Theater. I don't know if the Wilma Theater in Philadelphia, which is a wonderful, wonderful theater, and is kind of always at the roots of my theater tree. I did a literary dramaturgy internship, and we did the Angels in America, which is just like a feast for a dramaturg, because there's so much to dig into. And that's how I fell in love with dramaturgy and first heard the word. Then to make money, I was working at an accordion shop. So I was just, I don't know, making it work for a couple of years. And then, this makes it sound like I was I knew what I was doing. I didn't, but I was like, I have to make a decision to do something in my life, because I was working at an accordion shop and I don't play the accordion. So if you are passionate about accordion, that makes
sense. That's exactly what I was going to ask. I mean, it has to be the question, right? You know, the natural question is, do you play the accordion? No, that's okay.
Nope.
Still work at an accordion shop.
Nope. Yeah.
I gotta ask, how did you end up working in an accordion shop? How does that happen?
In Philadelphia, there's a huge German accordion community, and then there's a huge Mexican accordion community. There's a ton of accordion playing in Philadelphia, if you didn't know. Maybe other places too, but there was an accordion shop close to where I lived, and a friend of a friend was like, oh, we're looking for someone. So I was just sort of like their office manager.
Sure.
There was a little.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah. No, I grew up around like unironic polka. We would listen to polka.
Totally.
That was fun. And it wasn't a party. It wasn't a wedding. If there wasn't polka at some point, and actually reminds me of something. Very, very fun. Cool. Philadelphia is a wild town. I like Philadelphia a lot. It's walkable. It's got kind of an old world feeling, but it's also American. How long were you there?
I was there 3 years, and it's another great like regional theater city. There's a lot of good theater there, like the Twin Cities.
And I've known people who've gone to NYU, but I've never just asked it. What is that experience like attending NYU? I mean, you're already from out east, you know. I'm a hayseed from, you know, from the farm out here in North Dakota, but what's it like? I mean, it's like you're right in the heart of Manhattan going to school. I mean, how do you stay focused?
It's, I mean, I liked it. I don't have any like I went to grad school at Iowa, and like I didn't go to a single football game, but I'm like, yeah, Iowa Hawkeyes. Like, I have a
That's right.
decal, on my car, and
Be
I also went
careful, you know.
OU,
Yeah, be careful
but
over
I'm
here.
like,
Who hates Iowa? We hate
oh,
Iowa.
totally. Okay,
I'm
no,
just teasing.
it's
No,
fair.
I'm just teasing. No, it's fine. No, it's a very good school. Go Gophers.
That too, yeah. But yeah, like I don't have any like allegiance with like NYU doesn't really breed like that sort of
Are
like
you the you're the Violets, right? The NYU
yeah,
Violets.
it's the like there's I don't know, there's two, there's like Violets, and then also there's a Wild or Bobcat, maybe, I don't know. See, I'm not even clear on
It's a different experience. It's big, I mean, it really doesn't get more urbane in terms of like an urban. You are right in the heart of New York. I mean, it is right there.
yeah, it's I mean, it was great. I don't know, I don't know. I'm like, yeah, it was just
No, that's all right.
the
And
college
let me,
time,
yeah, I
and
get it. Yeah, let me I'm thinking of all the funny names that we could call the NYU sports team, you know, but we'll let it go. So what brought you out? Did you have you already said what brought you to the Twin Cities? How did you make your way out here?
Oh, I didn't have a job. I was graduating 2017, and I didn't have a job, and I had to pick a place, and I was like, I like the Midwest. And I just didn't, I don't know, I really just picked it.
I think people do, yeah. And it's not that, I mean, Iowa City's not that far from here. Sort of the same time zone, same region. And so, and was there like a particular job that you applied for at the Jungle? They were hiring for something?
I'm like, when you don't have a job and you're like, people are giving you advice, I've heard like people say this, and I'm very much like, this is what happened. Like, just figure out where you want to work and then get your foot in the door in any way. And that's what I did. I loved the Jungle. It like became my favorite. I was for here for about 2 years, and I really liked the Jungle. And then they had a development associate position open up, so just like doing fundraising and donations, and that's how I got in.
Hey,
And
great.
yeah, and I've over 5 years have a very different job now, though I still do a lot of donations work. But one in theater always is working on fundraising.
That's brilliant. That's a great example for young people or people who are looking to make a career change. If you have a target, set a target and go after it.
Totally.
It's how the world works. I mean, the world's run by the people who show up. You know, if you never apply or you never angle, you're never going to get what you want.
Totally. And we had just for people who are like, oh, it could never happen. Like our we had a box office associate who we at last minute needed an actor to fill in for a reading, and we had our box office associate who we knew had acted. We pulled them in. So, and then they got on stage at the Jungle for the first time. So, it's really, I recommend just being where you want to be.
Totally. I tell this to anybody who wants to be a playwright is the first thing you got to go do is take acting lessons. If you've never acted, you have to go do it. You can't, how could you compose a symphony if you don't play an instrument? You have to know. If you want to be in the theater, you have to go into the theater. And that might mean starting in the box office. Just be in it. That's true. And go see it too. I mean, every time I go in and see a play, it doesn't even matter what the play is. I mean, Amanda, you were in what, the play that falls apart? Is that the one? Or were you in that? No, you weren't in that. But that was one of our, what am I thinking, Amanda? That the
Oh, the
old
play that goes
log,
wrong.
the play that goes wrong. And so much fun. I'll never write anything like the play that goes wrong. Not really, but I mean, you know, I maybe, I mean, you know what I mean? That's such a particular kind of a play, right? But you go in and your theatrical mind, just like the synapses start firing, and you go, well, whoa, look at that moment they did. I can't even remember just specific things, the set falling apart and little moments. I don't know. It's just, if you want to be in the theater, go into the theater. You got to go see theater. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like, and I know he's a bit of a controversial figure, but I like David Mamet's writing about this. He's very workmanlike. It's like, it's a job. It's a job like any other job. You want to go work at the job, go do the job.
Yeah. And surround yourself with the kind of work and the kind of people that you want to, that you aspire to as well. You know, hear their ideas, hear how they started, hear how they, mm-hmm. you know, got to be where they are at the jungle. And I think those are really, I think that's really important, because sometimes we kind of like, as artists, like, oh, we got to focus, you know, we get so much into ourselves and what we have to do. And, you know, but what helps, I feel like, is surrounding yourself with people that you, that encourage you, that inspire you, you know? Yeah.
Well, Allison, you know, we had Nan Barnett on from the National New Play Network, and it sounds like, is the jungle part of that network?
I am, as a like individual. I'm not sure right. if we have a subscription.
No, it's fine. But yeah, the theater itself isn't, that's very, it's fine. I'm just curious, because I know like Mixed Blood is kind of the major one in town here that's associated with that network. They do really incredible work. I mean, you must know about the New Play Exchange and all of that. Do you ever pull scripts off of that?
Yeah, I do. I pull contact, and then I get people to send me their scripts. And if you like, another thing that I really take seriously are those like suggestion or recommendations, like people write recommendations. I love reading people's recommendations, and I've gotten a lot of scripts just from being like, just reading those. I don't know if anyone else like takes them seriously, but I do.
Well, I mean, I, you know, for people who've been listening to this show, I went out to Alaska to the Valdez Theater Conference to develop Moderation, which of course is on right now, moderationplay.com. But we had Dawson come on, the director of that festival, come on a couple of times to the podcast. And I was so surprised, because I came back to the New Play Exchange because Nan was mentioning that they're doing a remodel to it and everything. And I went to look, and everybody, it's like every other person who saw it in Alaska left a comment there. So now I have like a dozen. It's just outstanding. And it was really, really positive. So, I mean, I don't know if there's a way I could be using that better to sort of angle to have people leave. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's a really cool service they have, for people who don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I, that's awesome. Yeah. And it's not like if no one has comments on it, like I reject it or anything, but it's like, just like a lot of people have read this play and thought about it and said something. Like, I think that's really,
yeah, it's a good sign. I mean, they call it social proof, right? It's probably worth looking at. And you're a very busy person. You know, one of my formative memories as a playwright in the theater was in the Royal Court's Young Writers Program over in London, of course, the epicenter of new playwriting in the UK, one of the epicenters or the centers. That's bad English, but I'm an American, but one of the major centers. And they took us into the back room and they showed us the slush pile. They showed us the stack of scripts, and it was like, head high. And they said, you've got your first three pages. You gotta make the person read past page three. You don't have a name. Nobody knows who you are, right? And that really, really, really struck me. I'm sure you're a very generous reader, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. You get
totally, you know, and it's not as like, it's not three pages, but it is. I will get, I don't know, 20 pages deep and be like, I can't. So there's a digital slush pile, But yeah, no, it's true. There's so many scripts. And because actively solicit, I get sent a lot, which is good. I like that. But there are a lot.
Yeah. And for anybody,
I was going to say, how many scripts do you get, you know, on average a month or a year or whatever? And how do you narrow it down?
I feel like it's like a continual slow drip. So like, I don't know, one a week. I don't know. I honestly just kind of like work my way through. And then if someone has like recommended a playwright, I'll like, oh, I think I got something from them, and I'll like find it in my inbox. And so it's, it's really, it probably could be much more like ordered and organized, but it's kind of just like a, I don't know, a continual reading.
It sounds like you have a very comfortable cadence. Like, you know, it sounds like you're not putting yourself in a position, because I know some organizations, for example, the O'Neill, I mean, obviously that's a completely different animal from what you're doing, but the O'Neill, they have an entire office dedicated to literary because they get 1200 scripts a year. And the ones they pick are career makers. It makes people's career, or like revives careers. That's a different animal, though. They have their own flag out at the O'Neill. That's
just me over at the jungle, and there's the stakes are much, much lower.
Hey, I'm sure you probably enjoy, I would imagine, because I know even with Badmouth, our little, you know, theater company that doesn't even have our own space, we rent space. I love going to a playwright and say, hey, we want to do a reading of your play. What? How fun. You must enjoy doing that, right? That's a good feeling.
I do. And it's so funny. People have different reactions. Some playwrights are like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Just send me a check. And then others are like, oh, can I come? I want to work on this. We don't really have enough money to like really, really bring you over and do a workshop. But sometimes we can like swing a flight. So we've been able to do that for one playwright. The next one, Tulipa by Kate Douglas, which is an amazing play. Come see that.
Go on. You pitch that play. What is the one after?
It's called Tulipa. It is by Kate Douglas, who's a New York playwright. And we're going to bring her here to the jungle. And it's a one woman show. We're going to have, Sarah Agnew, who's, also a well-known, actor in the cities. Have you heard of Tulip Mania?
I know all about Tulip Mania. Yeah.
Well done you. I had never heard of it, but if you haven't heard of it, it's like in Holland in the 1600s, tulips became this like economic bubble, where people would just spend like literal life savings, millions of dollars for bulbs, these bulbs of tulips. And the most valuable ones were called broken bulbs, which were like striped tulips, not that full, you know, saturated color. Anyway, it's this story. It's a one woman play about this woman who, inherits money. She's a widow. Her husband dies. She inherits a bunch of money. And another man comes into her life, and they get caught up in tulip mania. And it's like one of these things where, like, it's not a spoiler alert because it's play is like sort of so much about other themes, but ends up losing all of her money from tulip mania. And it's just this like riches to rags story. But it's like a very... I don't know. I'm like, it's one of these things where like I read the play and I was like, I have never read anything like this. It's like this like poetic, the language is both poetic and like really muscular. So it's like beautiful and ferocious. You should just come see it because I really feel that it's not as type of thing that people, have seen before. So anyway, that's in April.
April, I think I'm on the website. Yeah, April. Yeah, okay. Yeah, great. And that would be another great example. I mean, if the playwright's coming into town, you want to put butts in seats, have the playwright, you know, reach out to us or put us in touch, and we'll be happy to talk with them. Oh. Yeah, that sounds great. My other major was history. So I recall very distinctly at the University of Minnesota here, go Gophers. We have a very renowned early modern history sort of department within the department, early modernism, and Tulip Mania was a huge part of it. And then we've just lived through one with crypto, and particularly NFTs were a modern contemporary Tulip Mania. And
I was just going to comment on that. I was like, oh, riches to rags. That sounds a lot like the tech bros, the Doge bros.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it happened. I mean, and people still use the Tulip Mania as it's like the arch case study in economic bubbles and the irrationality of markets. You know, a thing is worth what people will pay. And if somebody will pay you an entire year's salary for a tulip bulb, or a picture of a monkey.
Milady.
Well, we love the Miladies. We love the Miladies.
We love the Miladies on this chat. Yeah.
Yeah, we sure do. Yeah, that's great. Allison, yeah, that sounds so wonderful. We will try to attend all of these. So let's run it. We got maybe 5 more minutes. Let's run down what's coming up. So you have a reading coming up here in October. What was that? Veal is coming up.
Yep.
Okay. And then you have the production. Yeah, Amanda, go ahead.
I was just going to say that sounds like a perfect event to go to that's kind of on the spooky side. But if you're not like totally into the haunted houses, you know, that's too much for you. You can't handle that, which is kind of what the boat I'm sitting in. But this sounds like very freaky. And having been a middle school girl, like having to revisit that sounds super creepy. So I'm all about it. Yeah.
Yes. You were totally on the money for why it was programmed for late October.
Excellent.
Great. And then you have the second reading next April of Tulipa, and then the production coming up. And pitch the production one more time. When is that? And
The Effect by Lucy Preble.
Okay.
And it's two people fall in love during a clinical drug trial for an antidepressant. And that is the month of March at the Jungle Theater.
Awesome. Well, now I got to ask a few more questions here as we land the plane, as it were. What's your favorite thing about directing relative to the development side of new plays? Like, that's a very different. This is the second play I've directed. I directed a production of One Good Marriage for the company, and then now Moderation here. So I'm learning a lot of things about directing myself. What do you like about that? What do you like about the directing process?
And I will say, I also saw One Good Marriage, and that was wonderful too.
Oh, great. Oh, good. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, listen, I'm very fortunate to have Amanda as an actor. I feel really blessed. Really.
Yeah.
Amanda, that reminds me, after we're done here, I have to ask you something about about the process here. But in any case, we'll do that off air. Allison, what do you get from directing that you don't get from the sort of the dramaturgy or the development side of things?
Yeah, it's I don't know. And personally, in my personal life, it is the only place where I feel confident, like truly confident, is in the rehearsal room directing. And I think because with dramaturgy, from comments of like playwright and probably not even, I don't know. I feel very afraid of harming the play when I'm a dramaturg. I really feel that I could hurt it by saying the wrong thing or just, I don't know, being incorrect or being too prescriptive in notes. And I just don't have that fear with directing because it is, I don't know. It's the actors are, you know, they take on direction, but it's then they have their own choices that they make. I love shaping the pieces. I feel like it's like tapping in like nailing in like a panel of wood or something, and you're just like tapping in little nails at a time, but not like screwing one down and then it messes up there. It's probably a bad metaphor, but it makes sense in my head. That's how it feels like through the rehearsal process. You're just like slowly molding and gelling. I don't know. It is where I feel happiest and most confident.
Yeah. Directing is so fascinating because, and in the case of Moderation, I think I was far enough away from the play that I was able to direct it about as objectively as I could. I mean, I wrote that play four or five years ago, and it had had enough development that I was able to cut a bunch and be pretty dispassionate about it. So I think I could see a scenario where if you were a playwright who wanted to direct your own work, it could go really poorly. If you were still tweaking words or going, wait, that scene doesn't work or that beat doesn't work, that process could be a disaster. But in our case, we were ready to go. And so I took one hat off and put another hat on. I do think in the room there were some instances where, because that script is a little bit tricky, it's a little Pinterest-esque in the sense that it's like there are layers and layers and layers happening. And there were certain moments where in the rehearsal room, and Amanda, correct me if you think I'm I guess, lying here, but why would I lie on the radio? But there were moments where I just said, no, this is what's happening. Do you know? And I think I clarified, we were able to cut to the chase a little bit a few times, but I think a third party could direct it and be comfortable. I think directing, finally, getting back to something that David Mamet says, he sort of says the job of the director is just to get out of the way.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. And I think that's very true. I think if you have good, talented people, the director shouldn't have very much to do. And your job is to be an observer. And then I think, and Allison, I want to hear what you think about this idea that it's kind of about having good taste.
Oh, totally. Yes. And like that idea that if you cast well, like half your job is done. And that's very true.
Yeah.
It is. And I'll say it's kind of like, you know, it's just like taking care of like a baby plant. You know, you prune it a little bit, you know, whatever, but it's mostly just watering and fertilizing and, like you said, shaping and then having it bloom at the exact right time, you know, right as, you know, and Kevin said this too, is like landing the plane at the exact right time and coming in, like, previews kind of go right into opening, and the way that you incorporate, you know, audience interaction so that it's fully bloomed by the time that it's up and running, and it just, you know, everybody gets to look at this beautiful thing, you know,
I like that metaphor. Yeah.
Allison, thank you so much for coming on Mouthing Off. This has been a real pleasure, and thank you for supporting our little theater too. You saw One Good Marriage, you saw them absolutely. And one more time, moderation is at The Hive here in St. Paul, moderationplay.com, October 3rd to the 13th. Please come, please see Amanda, who has somehow memorized a 90-minute two-hander. And it's just really, really, really fun to see her on stage. And with the great Matt Sachs. And one more time, Allison, jungletheater.org. The next reading is Veal on October 21st and October 22nd. That is free.
Yes.
You can afford free. So go over to jungletheater.org and go see this new play by JoJo Jones, a reading of Veal. And Allison, like you said, open door. Come on in anytime. Thank you so much.